Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Good evening, David.
And we are the faithful, following the Bakersfield Condors into the playoffs. I imagine there's probably, what, 1,000 Oilers fans? Well, probably not that many, maybe 500 watching it on the HL.com. What do you think? What's your best
guess? I'd be surprised if it was less than 1,000. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a couple thousand. Right? There's a lot of hardcore fans out there and people that are just crying for reasons for optimism. And you're going to find a few if you watch the Bakersfield Condors.
Yes, the team Peter Shirelli built.
Yeah, the team Craig McTavish and Jay Woodcroft built.
Bruce, that was a hell of a win tonight. 5-2. They clinched their series against the rancid Colorado Eagles. And I'm just call them rancid because they had some nasty plays from that team tonight. That was a disgraceful performance in a lot of ways from the Colorado Eagles. I know they're trying to rough it up, but some of these hits by players, I mean, this is just borderline criminal mentality on the ice. I just getting sick of seeing it. If you're ramming someone into the boards like Cale Kessie did to Cooper Marody, you're assaulting them. Mm-hmm. And I know that these are grown adults and professionals who consent to getting hit. No one gives consent to get rammed into the boards from behind by a big oaf like mm-hmm. Cale Kessie. I just think it's asinine. And that guy should be suspended for, I'm starting to rail on about it, but I'm just incensed by that hit. I hated it.
Uh-huh. It
knocked Marody out of the game. And Bruce, they only gave the refs
two. They saw it. They called it, and they gave him 2 minutes. You tell me, knocked a star player out of the game, down the tunnel, and who knows for how long, with a clearly illegal hit from behind, right in the numbers, sent him flying into the boards. I mean, I don't know.
Checked off all the boxes except for a hit to the head. The only thing Kessie missed was the head, but other than that, it had everything illegal: hit from behind, charging. Running a guy into the boards. Cale Kessie should be ashamed of himself for a play like that.
And I don't suppose he is.
I don't suppose he is. Hockey players who make plays like that, unless it's an accident, you should just – there's no place for that in hockey. And I'm glad that the pro leagues are finally suspending these incidents. And I don't know if that will be reviewed. I don't know how it works in the AHL. But Kessie should get 10 games for that.
Well, anyway, it was in the first period, there was 4 very, very heavy hits landed by two Eagles players, both with Edmonton connections. Cale Kessie clobbered Tyler Benson early, and then he crushed Cooper Marody with the hit from behind. The hit on Benson was heavy, but mostly clean. And the other fellow was former Edmonton Oil King Mason Geertsen, who sent Marody careening into the boards earlier. Like Marody took 2 very hard and very questionable hits in that period. And the second one, or the 2 combined, sent him out of the game. And Geertsen also, I can't remember who it was, crushed with a...
Is that the one that set off Keegan Lowe in the fight?
Yeah, he sent Patrick Russell basically into the open player's gate. Really dangerous hit. We've seen those before, and they don't often end well. Luckily, Patrick Russell got up to fight another day, and Keegan Lowe didn't wait another day. He just waded right in there, and he didn't wind up getting either the guys that were throwing the hits, but he squared off with a willing combatant from Colorado. And, I'm not that big on hockey fights anymore, but every once in a while there's an occasion where someone has to stand up for his team.
And you really know what, spot now and then, don't they, Bruce?
There was 4 dirty checks before that, and I would argue there was probably none afterwards. Like, that was kind of a turning point in terms of the physical play. That was the time when Bakersfield said, you're not getting away with that crap. And it was mainly an even fight, but he really clocked Buddy with one good right-handed punch. And after that, the Bakersfield's veterans, like Brad Malone, he landed a heavy hit. Mitch Callahan landed a heavy hit. Ryan Stanton landed a heavy hit. And they were, I would say, you know, not dangerous hits of the type we'd seen earlier in the game, but they were answer backs, kind of saying, you know, you're going to run our young guys like that. We're going to, you know, we're going to stand up and be counted. And
I do not see the Bakersfield Condors as a team that's going to be intimidated. There's just too many super solid, gritty, tough players on that mm-hmm. team.
Yeah,
and I guess that's all Colorado thought they had. And essentially, it really is. They were outclassed in this game. Yeah. Series by Bakersfield, so they just thought they'd do that as their only hope of winning. And I'm with you on that. I don't generally like fighting anymore, but man, it was great to see Keegan Lowe stand up. And
something had to be done at that point. I mean, you said one guy is already down the tunnel and they run a guy from behind into an open player's gate. I mean, enough.
Hockey is
that has to stop.
Hockey is intimidation is a huge part of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And your team has got to be able to stand up for itself and show real spine and not back down. And you need players like Lowe who now and then are going to step up, and there's Evan Poli on that. But again, I just think there's any number of players on the Bakersfield team who are pretty tough cookies and willing to fight hard and battle hard and stand up for their mm-hmm. teammates. It's a scrappy team that hunts together. They hunt as a pack and they fight as a pack. And I'm glad that didn't pay off. So Bruce, we're going to do, this is our six things of note, six items okay. of note. And I already did one of mine there. I just couldn't contain myself, I guess. This was a hell of a win, 5-2 for the Bakersfield Condors. They win the series and a really tricky game. I think that we recorded grade eight chances and they got them 17-8, the Condors, yeah. But it was just, they were just pouring it on. And they got up 2-1.
They got down 2-1.
Excuse me. They got up. They tied it. They was at 1-1. That's right. Yeah. And then with 1 second left in the second period, the Colorado Eagles scored a goal and got up 2-1 with a second left. Now with a fragile team,
yeah,
that could break your back. But this Condors team is not that, and they came back and won it in the third period. So Bruce, let's stick to our items now.
Mm-hmm.
I've done my first item was the Kessie hit on Marody. What is your first item? This is item number two.
Yeah, I'm going to just give a general thumbs up to the Bakersfield team for taking command of that game. They dominated largely the first period and couldn't score because Pavel Francouz in the Colorado net was tremendous. But things were going against them. They had a guy hurt. You know, they gave up that goal with 1 second to go, with 1 second left in the power play, too, which is just a killer sort of double whammy. And they came out of the room down 2-1. They had four unanswered goals in the third period, and they just dominated. They just took over and said, we're not going to be denied by you plugs. And they really just raised their game further and finally started finding the net. Led by your next good thing, which I'm pretty sure I forgot to let the dog in. So I'm going to let you talk about item number three, the 2-2 goal, while I go and attend to Dusty.
Tyler Benson had not been playing, hadn't been notable for his play in this series until tonight. And tonight he just had a fantastic game. On the first goal, Bakersfield's first goal, he took the puck at center ice, and it was a 2-on-2, and he just feathered a beautiful pass to send in Mitch Callahan on a breakaway. Callahan made a really fine move to score the first goal for Bakersfield. Then we go to the fourth goal of the game, and another absolutely great pass from Benson. He takes the puck in, he's in over the blue line. And he controls the puck, and he passes it back. He manages to make a cross ice pass over to Lagesson at the blue line. Lagesson fires a shot, and it goes in, I think, off Malone. And that was the killer goal. And to your point, Bruce, Bakersfield just had a really good game. Late in the third period, there was this terrible penalty call on Sterrett where he batted the glove. The glove's right in a dangerous spot in front of net, and he just goes to play it with his blocker and stick. And now they say it hit his stick and it went out. I guess technically it's a penalty if your stick knocks it out, but he was just making a save. He was making a
blocker, and he was batting the the puck kind of popped and he took a swat at it with his blocker and it went just over the glass.
So anyway,
that's the way of game.
Yeah, I don't know. That just was struck me as a weird call. But Colorado got nothing. They just had nothing. They got nothing. Bakersfield gave them nothing. Mm-hmm. In the last 7 minutes of that game, they just were never any threat to score down the home run stretch, and that was excellent to see. This is a good Bakersfield team. So, item number four, Bruce, what is your next item?
Well, I like Caleb Jones out of this game tonight. He really showed to me his skating. He had his what the scouts call four-way skating ability on full display tonight, and he was going forward, backward, sideways, and using those skills in both offensive and defensive situations and transition plays. For example, there was one play in the first period where he jumped into the offensive slot and he opened up to take a pass and then feed it right back across the slot for a dangerous shot. There was another play where he made a really, really crisp play walking the line. Then he kind of reversed the puck with a behind the back and then jumped into the hole. And he had the cycle going where there was really no way for the defenders to contain him. And then defensively, he used the same set of skills. He made he made one real terrific stop in the third period off of Andrew Agazino, who was probably the top forward for Colorado. And he's a speedy guy, and he took the puck wide, and Jones took him wide, and he went with him all the way around, and he just lifted his stick, took the puck off him, walked away with it, and cleared the zone, and just made it look easy. And, I mean, these sound like mundane plays, and I suppose they are, but you got to be able to make those plays. And too many times we've been watching defenders at the NHL level who aren't able to do these kind of things. And, I mean, Jones is still an up-and-comer and a learner, and he makes mistakes. But, boy, his upside is really starting to shine through, I think.
Bruce, I agree with you. I noticed him as well tonight, and if you hadn't had him as one of your items of note, he would have been one of mine. He just was fantastic. His skating is superlative. I mean, he's such a strong prospect, Bruce. He's such a strong young player. He's 22 now. Mm-hmm. That he's almost like he's the kind of player you expect Nashville to break into the league, right? He'd be the next guy for the Nashville Predators, like a team loaded with great defensemen. You think, oh, geez, they did it again. They got another one, right? Like where do they get these guys? But yet he's coming up for the Oilers. And this is, it's such a great thing that to develop a player like this. I can't remember that. Jeff Petrie's probably the last time it happened. And it's just so rare for the Oilers to do it, but it allows them, they have these two fantastic young prospects in Evan Bouchard and Dmitry Samarukov. Samarukov has 18 points in 16 OHL playoff games. He's ever since that his team traded away Ryan Merkley, he's absolutely exploded as a point scorer at the OHL mm-hmm. level and has become a dominant, if not the dominant defenseman in the OHL playoffs right now, is Dmitry Samarukov. So they have these two players, and they don't have to. We don't have to think, hey, could they possibly make the Oilers next year? We don't even have to think that. Mm-hmm. It's not even, does it have to be on the radar? Because they have Caleb Jones, and they also have William Laugesen, who is mm-hmm. who in a different way is a very solid player. And I do rate them a little higher than Ethan Bear. I just think they're bigger. Slightly more effective players than Bear, although I don't mind Bear's game at all. But Jones is just—he's fantastic, and what a great find for the Oilers. And I think that's the Bob Green draft, right, from 2015.
Yes, Jones and Bear.
Jones and Bear come out of, so good for Bob Green, drafting a player like Caleb Jones. So my next item of note number five, Bruce, Evan Bouchard's goal. Holy, look at your smile there. Yeah.
I like it.
Wow. Wow. Like, when was Bruce, in terms of like a heavy shot, so think of an Edmonton Oilers defenseman with a heavy shot.
Yep.
Who can get it off really fast. Who could also like Like the guy in the NHL, and this is like the best player in the NHL right now. This is Brent Burns, right?
Yes, he
can get it, and almost from any angle, he just somehow finds a way to get that puck quickly and hard on net,
hard
and fast. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he can tee it up and blast it like that. No, so I'm not saying Evan Bouchard is Brent Burns. He's got a long way to go. He's at the AHL level, right? But that shot, Bruce. Like I can't. I have a hard time. Like when I think of the history of hard shots on the Edmonton Oilers blue line, you know. So there's Sheldon Surrey,
right,
who had a killer slap shot, but he took some time to tee it up. Usually, yeah. We go back a little bit more. There's I don't know. There's Riho Ruotsalainen, maybe, who had that combination of a hard shot and quickly on net. I mean, Siltanen, if we go way back, Siltanen had a
Coffee
had great slap shots, but it took him a little while. Heidi had a great slap shot.
It took him a while to figure out how to shoot quickly. Coffee did learn to do that. He started scoring more and more goals on wrist shots and stuff through traffic. And just well-timed shots. But Bouchard seems to have that knack for getting the puck through. And, I mean, this was a situation where Francouz had been stopping everything.
Yeah.
And it was 2-1, and you're starting to think, is this one of those games where they're just going to somehow steal it on the road and it's going to go down to a game 5? And it's kind of getting a little nervous, even though it's early in the third period. And Bouchard... first of all, he made the outlet pass to... Well, first of all, he made a diving defensive play to clear a dangerous puck that could have been a shorthanded chance. Then he made the outlet pass that led into the zone. Then he followed in. The puck came along the boards right to him, and he just stepped into the middle of the ice. Had just a little bit of time to look up and see what was developing. Then, bang, the next thing you know, the water bottle is flying off of the roof of the net because he's had it scored a direct hit on a slap shot from 50 feet out. Whoa. And that was really the turning point of the game. I think after that, Bakersfield was largely in control.
It was a tremendous, tremendous play. And you're right. Without that shot, this game could have a different... Without that... And that's the kind of... When you're a coach and you're lucky to have really talented players on your team, that's those moments where you just think, oh, thank God for God-given talent. Like, there's nothing better than unbelievable, blinding talent, because it wins you hockey games. And it's what the Oilers have been lacking. Like, Russell can't shoot. Larson can't shoot. Sekera can't shoot. Klefbom's a very deliberate shooter who can shoot, but he takes a long time. And
doesn't necessarily get it through or hit the target.
Yeah, that's right. Benning's got a pretty good little shot, and Nurse can tee it up now and then. But again, he's not. It's just now and then. Like, it's a now and then thing. There's no one on the team. It's even remotely close to having this skill shooting the puck. So, you know, maybe one day Bouchard will shoot it as hard as Barry Long.
Yeah, holy man, Barry Long. I was at the game where he broke the goalpost in the old Northlands Coliseum.
That's an apocryphal story, is it not, Bruce?
It's not. It's not. I was there. He hit the post. It was the left post at the non-Zamboni end, and he hit it about halfway up, and it made, instead of the usual ping, it made this weird clank sounding when it hit the post. And then the next game, and for the entire rest of the season, that goal post in that spot had a piece of tape wrapped around it.
And that was the WHA.
This was WHA, yeah. I mean, you're too cheap to buy a new net, but I'm sure damage was done with that rocket. And they had a few guys in the, here's their mandatory 70s references. They had a few guys, and I think of all of them, Claire the Milkman Alexander. I don't think I ever saw a guy who could shoot a better shot than that guy. It was his one claim to fame, but boy, did he have a rocket and a half.
Who do you think shot it the hardest of any Oilers defenseman? To me, it's between Surrey and Siltanen.
Well, yeah, the guys we just talked, Barry Long and Claire Alexander, are right there. The Milkman, I was at a game in the WHA. It was down on our end, and he took a slap shot, hit the crossbar, and it hit the crossbar, and up it goes over the glass, as you often see. Well, this didn't just go up over the glass. It went up over the Reds, went up over the Blues, and it hit the catwalk in the end zone. Crossbar, about a 2 second delay while it climbed, and sort of second stage rocket took it up to the catwalk, and it thunk off the catwalk. Never seen it before or since. But it was just a ridiculous shot.
The Oilers are going to be sorely to have Caleb Jones and even Evan Bouchard on their third pairing next year. Like, I know they don't have to have Bouchard.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to start the year in Bakersfield. But that weapon on the power play, they're going to be tempted as hell because they don't have anyone. And they're not trading for a top defenseman. This is a total pipe dream, I think. It's not happening. And I actually don't think it should happen. Because you need to spend some money at forward to get better forwards if you're going to spend some money. And with Bouchard and Jones coming and Samarukov, you don't want to clog it up either. You already have it clogged up with veterans. So I think acquiring another defenseman, personally, I think it's off the table. Like, I don't think it's...
They got to clear out a couple guys to bring that guy in, maybe, but...
Yeah, that's the only way.
I don't know who it would be or how it would work. I do know they have talent in the pipeline. I mean, this is they're six deep, and they're not all going to make it, but they're not none of them going to make it. You know, like some of those guys are going to make. Now, Evan Bouchard, before we get too far ahead of ourselves, Evan Bouchard played about 5 minutes tonight.
What do you think about that?
Barely saw the ice other than the power play, but that's, of course, where he did his damage.
What do you think about that?
I'm not sure he played way more than that the last game. I think possibly the way that Colorado came out and were just slamming the bodies left and right, that possibly it was a reaction by Woodcroft of, you know, sheltering him a little bit from that stuff. But I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask the coach, but maybe he was just happy with his three defense pairs and, wanted to minimize the risk or whatever, you know.
It's not like any of those D-men are playing bad.
I didn't say anything bad out of Bouchard. There was nothing there saying, well, he deserved to be benched after that boner, because there wasn't anything like that, right?
And there's nothing bad from the other defensemen, though, either. Like, Logan Day's the weakest of them, but he's playing well. Like, I have no complaints right now about the way Logan Day's playing. So, you know, now it'll be interesting. Logan Day's
best play of the game was when Cale Kessie took a run at him. And he stepped aside, and Kessie did a face plant into the end glass. And then Lagesson did the same thing about 2 minutes, well, two shifts later, and Kessie did the same thing again. He took a huge run at the guy and missed, and took himself out. He wobbled his way down the tunnel after that one. And so they were starting to get their head up and probably communicating with one another when Kessie was running around, which he was. And a couple of times they used his forechecking speed and intent against him. And Day did a great job, and Lagesson did an even better job of brushing off Mr. Kessie.
He should have been kicked out of the game after the
murder. He should have been gone after that hit.
Yeah. What are we at, Bruce? Number six, item six.
I think that was about it. Yeah.
Did you have one more?
I had the comeback of the team. I had Jones, and I had. Oh yeah, I did. My bad.
Number six.
Brad Malone. Man, this guy, like, he's got to be the ultimate tweener, in that he comes up to the NHL and he looks just barely passable as an NHL player, right? He's almost the definition of entry level or tweener. And yet in the AHL, he's a force. And tonight he was a force. He did take the penalty that led to the 2-1 goal. But he's a power forward.
He's his setup of Russell there on the...
The shorthand, the game winner shorthanded, where he jumped on a puck that missed the net and rang around the boards, and he jumped out and he shook off the one defender for the 2-on-1 and made the perfect cross-ice feed for Russell to bury. That was the 3-2 goal. And then it was only about 2 or 3 minutes later that he scored the 4-2 goal on an even better play, where, first of all, he came back hard on the back check And just as it looked like Colorado was gaining the zone, he lifted the guy's stick, stole the puck off him, turned it north, shook off another check, managed to keep his balance while he chipped the puck forward, and then he joined the rush from behind, went all the way to the net front just as the shot was coming through, and the rebound bounced in off of him and into the net. And so it wasn't a pretty goal, but he made like two terrific plays in the neutral zone first, and then he just followed up and he went to the net. Sometimes you do that, the puck hits you and goes in, and this was one of those times, and it was a goal he earned as far as I was concerned.
It's funny because you watch him and you think, like, he's played a number, like more than 100 NHL games, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep. And you watch him in the NHL and he is not effective. He's not a good player in the NHL. He can't keep up. But it makes me just wonder, is it the skill gap or is it a confidence gap with Malone? He just seems to play. He just seems to think, I'm going to make a play when he's in the NHL. In the NHL, it's like, I'm going to try not to make a mistake.
Right.
And it's two different mindsets. And one mindset in hockey will absolutely kill you as a player. Mm-hmm. And the other one will make you as a player. And maybe you should see a sports psychologist next time before he comes. I'm sure they all do before he goes to the NHL. Because he doesn't show any of that at the NHL. He's got more ability, I think. Because, like, I think there's less of a difference between, let's say, Curry and Gambardella at both levels. Right. They're kind of the same player.
Right.
You don't notice this. But with Malone, it just hits you over the head. Like, who is this guy? Yeah. Why didn't we see him one shift or two?
Winning face-offs, killing penalties, battling along the walls, winning battles, playing we have, I think, seen him play in a hard-nosed game at the NHL level. Yeah. But we don't see the efficiency and the positive outcomes. I mean, the AHL, the goals and assists, well, you don't really expect that necessarily to carry over, but he has a fairly complete game. I mean, he's a veteran and a good one at the AHL level. And that line with him and Russell and Gambardella is, three guys in there that have been around and played for quite a few years. They're all in their mid to late 20s, and he seems to be the leader of the group, and he's an important player on this team.
Yeah, they're all leaders. I mean, and Russell, that the goal that he fired in there, that shorthanded goal, what a beautiful shot. And ever since you made the Fernando Pisani comparison, it's been stuck in my head. And who knows, Bruce?
Nice, eh? Well, I mean,
good comparison.
Yeah, he's 20, same age that Fernando was when he finally broke through. And Pisani had, 4 years of NC2A hockey, 2.5 years in the minor leagues before he finally got called up. And Russell's he was a late starter in NC2A. He only played 2 years of it, but I think he graduated about the same age. And now he's had his 2 years of AHL play. And he's actually a Group 6 free agent this summer, but I sincerely hope that the Oilers are able to convince him that they're the team that he's going to get a shot with. And they gave him a shot this year. And hopefully he will sign up for at least one more year, because I see him as a useful player, sure. Very useful at the Bakersfield level, obviously.
Yeah, but him, sign him. And
as a tweener, as a occasional call-up. And who knows? I mean, if he keeps improving. Fernando Pisani, he kept on improving right into basically his early 30s. And some of these, especially the smart guys, they just keep on getting better. And he might be one of those. So far, every year, I've liked him since the start. But he was coming from a long way back, and now he's a very, very solid player at the AHL level.
I didn't like him that much. I didn't see I didn't see an NHL player until this year. I saw a guy who hustled, mm-hmm. who could skate and was willing to hit. So I liked his effort, but he's kind of like Luke Esposito at that point. Like you wouldn't think in a future NHLer. Same with Esposito right now, but who knows? And I
bottom six are 100%. Like, that's all.
And I would say he's definitely worth a contract, as is Evan Poli. They both of them have earned pro contracts with the Oilers for next year. out of these playoffs of the players. And I now I don't know about other players like Day or Esposito. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. They if they're coming back, it'll be on minor league deals. But Russell and Pola, I think, are in a different camp. You know what they need, Bruce, is they need the GM in place.
Mm-hmm.
You need a new GM in place. And I was writing about this today in my post.
Yeah, I saw that.
Sometimes you get a new GM and a new coach in.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you have a coach from another, like Dallas Eakins coming in. And all they want to do is bring players they know from their organization. And they overlook and they undersell the players already there. And they don't get a fair shot. It would be great if the Oilers hired a GM. Like, first of all, you got to get the right guy. But if they're able to get the right guy right away, he's going to be here and watching this Bakersfield run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to be huge for some of these players and their futures if the GM's in place, because he's going to see players like, first of all, he's going to see a real team that speaks well of Jay Woodcroft, frankly.
Yeah, sure
does. The way these guys play and fight together and battle together and work together, that's the coach's doing. That's the coach brings teams together like that. And I give Woodcroft some credit. So it's important for Woodcroft's career, but it's also important for all of these players, Gambardella, Patrick Russell, Curry, mm-hmm. Jones, Lagesson, Bear, all of them, Poli, in terms of how to think of them going into next year. Like, do you have to bring in another 32-year-old, 34-year-old forward or two for your fourth line? Or can you trust that you've got from the collection of three or four or five players, a couple of guys who are going to actually earn jobs in the fourth line for the Oilers next year? And I personally think that they do. But you in the modern NHL, you can block those players in a second by signing a player to a contract. And this is the way it works. Like, everyone says they want competition and, well, they've got to earn their job. But come on, man, you start handing out one-way NHL contracts,
yep,
and you have effectively blocked those guys from coming up. That's the and that's the way the NHL, there isn't this competition. The competition is for those contracts right now. It's not in training yet.
As soon as Toby Reeder signs a $2 million deal, he's in the NHL and he's on the team. And Joe Gambardella or, you know, whoever is blocked from a pathway. And so I keep hearing about how they should have a full roster of NHL players. Well, that'd be nice in theory if they were like real NHL players. But if you're just talking about players with NHL experience and NHL contracts who are, you know, borderline players that have a leg up on the borderline guys that are trying to break through, I'm not sure how much for the good it is. And I would, you know, and one thing's for darn sure is I'm in polite mode tonight. The Oilers desperately, desperately need to have guys who can kill a bloody penalty. It's been such a problem with this team for so long. And if they've got guys in the minor league level like Patrick Russell or even Brad Malone, for that matter, that are successful on the penalty kill, maybe they deserve a longer look than the guys they've been defaulting to up here that haven't been getting the job done.
You know, two other veterans I like on this team are Stanton and Lowe. Mm-hmm. And I like, they don't do a lot of really good out there. Like, they're not strong passers of the puck. And they don't have a future in the NHL. I don't think either of them. Like honestly, I don't think they do. But they are really fine AHL players at this point. I mean, they're 27 and 29 or something like that, 26 and 29. Mm-hmm. And they just really get the job done for Bakersfield. Stanton has really stood out to me as kind of a quiet leader on the blue line, making all the good plays, all the smart plays, calming everybody down. And useful
mentors for some of these younger guys, eh?
Yeah. And if Stanton, like if the Oilers needed, like on an emergency basis, someone to step into the NHL next year, you could do worse than Stanton. He'll hold his own for a while at least. So good for those two guys. Well, Bruce, let's leave it there. You're doing the game grades tonight.
I am. And I got a ways to go, but it's odd watching the game on the computer. I do it entirely different than I do watching the Oilers, where I'm watching on the big screen and taking notes. Here, I'm taking my notes in the computer. So you're going to get probably a more less polished and more sort of episodic string of plays, but whatever. I mean, we're trying to make observations and capture vignettes of that might give us clues about what kind of players these guys are. So that's all we're doing here.
I'm sure it'll be good. All right. Thanks for talking, Bruce.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. And a toast to the Bakersfield Condors. This is my championship mug from my keeper league, by the way.
All right. Let's do the simultaneous sip for the Bakersfield
Condors. A toast to the Bakersfield Condors for winning a playoff series.
Cheers. And many more.
Many more. Three more would be nice.
Thanks for talking, Bruce.
On to the San Diego Gulls.
All right. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.